When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
I mean, what's pro football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
The Super Bowl is over. That means it's officially draft season. It's been draft season for a while, but now it's official. Sam Monson here, back with the great Mike Renner for another draft episode of the PFF NFL podcast. How's it going, Mike?
Doing fantastic. And like you said, it's been draft season for a while.
Right.
For me, as a Packers fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been looking since like mid-October.
That's the thing. We're there on, you know, Radio Row all the week before the Super Bowl, and 30 of the 32 teams in the NFL are full into draft mode, full into, you know, off-season team building mode. Like, there's only two teams relevant for the last week. Before we get onto that, though, I have to get your take, because we talked about it after the game. Where are you on that James Bradberry holding call?
Ooh, that's a good question. So, I mean, by the letter of the law, probably a hold. But I think the best way I saw it put, I don't remember who said it on Twitter, but they said if that wasn't flagged, you would have had about 5% of the outrage of it if it was flagged.
Yeah.
That's like a good way to put it. It's like that wasn't flagged, no one bats an eye.
Right.
No one bats an eye. And I think it's similar. I think it's even more so than last week's penalty. You know, obviously both games kind of end on, like, unfortunately, on penalties, putting them into scoring position, kind of like ending it. But the one last week was much more like, that's a penalty 9.5 times out of 10. This is a penalty probably 50-50, honestly.
Yeah.
That was probably just more of like a toss-up, how many times that gets flagged versus doesn't.
The one thing that confuses me is they showed a replay in the stadium where the kind of pull of the jersey is much more obvious. And I haven't seen that replay outside of the stadium.
Like, really? Fox
didn't seem to show it. It's not all over Twitter. I don't understand why that replay is not everywhere right now.
Was it the one from kind of like a high angle that's like right as he's going off, you kind of see him still on it as he's kind of separating?
Yeah, but it's from like behind Bradberry almost.
Okay,
it's an angle that I haven't seen.
The end zone they're going towards from that angle. Okay.
Which is the angle we were sitting at in the auxiliary press box thing. So it was much more obvious in the stadium than it's been subsequently. So like every, you know, video or kind of thing I've seen since, you're like, yeah, that's really marginal looking. But I think it was much more clear in that. And specifically, I think it's much more clear to the official that was looking at it, because as soon as that jersey comes out, even if it's marginal, they call those, right? Like, that's the kind of the thing they're conditioned to look for.
That's it. It was a flag. Like, it is a, by letter of the law, a flag. So if you are an Eagles fan, that's not where I'm looking to, like, lick my wounds.
So I saw Richard Sherman say on his podcast that it was so marginal that New York should have called down and been like, pick it up. just pick it
that
up.
That would have been hell. All hell would have broken loose. They could not do that.
This would be like the one scenario where the NFL's like obsession with hiding how they do things would have actually worked in their favor, right?
Yeah.
Because they could have actually gotten away with getting on the horn. After a conversation, we've decided there is no flag at the play, right? And it's just New York picking it, saying, dudes, you cannot end the Super Bowl that way. Pick that flag up this second.
Yeah, after the AFC Championship game, I mean, it really was for such a good game, both that and last week, 2 weeks ago. it sucks that it has to end like that.
It really does.
It kind of really just put a stain on it.
It was such a good game that. It really, it does. That's, I'm so kind of torn because you're right. Like, letter of the law, it is a flag, and you can see why they call it, but it's just such a crappy way for such a good game.
And I think that's why you're seeing so many people talking about it, is because they wanted it to end better.
Right.
I would say it's more that they got spoiled. It spoiled the fun than it actually was an egregious call.
One more bit of NFL news we need to hit before we get into the draft. Shane Steichen to the Indianapolis Colts. It's not Coach Saturday.
This one was a no-brainer, right? Like, it was an absolute, I mean, especially Coach Saturday, but like, even in the realm of all the quarterbacks that were, all the coaches, head coaching candidates that were available, hey, maybe the guy that Coach Justin Herbert and Jalen Hurts is the guy to then take whatever rookie quarterback you're going to draft to the next level.
Like, right.
The guy who has the best track record in recent years of quarterback development is probably the guy I want leading my rookie quarterback into the NFL.
We joked that the 12-hour marathon interviews, you know, were basically just Jim Irsay playing Madden with the various coaching candidates, right? And he would set up with the 04 Madden or the 04 Colts team, and he'd give them like the 2023 version and then just be waxing them left and center. There were reports coming out that that actually wasn't a million miles away from what they were doing with these coaching candidates.
I haven't
seen like setting up specific scenarios, you know, in-game scenarios, and basically going, all right, here's the situation, go.
So he is actually putting them on Madden.
Right. So he's basically setting them up in game situations on Madden and being like, all right, let's see what you got.
I like it.
It's not the worst idea in the world. It's certainly not the worst idea they've had surrounding a head coach even in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if you're going to interview a guy for 12 hours, it better be more than just like conversating about what you guys do on the weekends, right?
Right.
It better have some
substance
actual,
to it.
Yeah. And that's one of the more difficult things to find, though. We always say, more so in like GM interviews and like front office personnel, it's like, what did they actually do for their team? You know, what were their actual responsibilities? Because these are closed doors. You know, you can talk behind closed doors about a guy's actual responsibilities, but like, what was he having to do from a game planning perspective? How much does he know from an actual like play calling? And he did take over play calling. He was their play caller this past season, and I believe halfway through 2021 is when he took over. So like, knowing that a guy has those things and can do those things for you, sometimes you don't know when you're hiring a guy or when you're interviewing a guy. So like, I think that's one of the smarter things Drew Mercer's done, we'll say.
All right, we're going to jump into draft talk, and it's running backs today, so that'll be a fun.
Hell yeah. That's what you come to PFF for.
Exactly, right?
Our
running back takes. But before that, we're back in the Western and Southern studios. The sound should be better. There's no people walking everywhere around us. We're not doing it from the back corner of a hotel room with a curtain behind us.
I am still pushing tequila, though. I will say that, so just go ahead.
Emmett Smith gave us a free bottle of it.
That's actually sick.
Should have brought it in. We're back in the Western and Southern studio. The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, Mike, we've been doing this position by position. We're going to build the perfect prospect. So we're going to start with the NFL guys, what that looks like from a current NFL player point of view, and then you're going to tell us what that looks like when it comes to the draft guys. So your components for the running back: speed, burst, agility, strength, contact balance, vision, and then route running.
You did a lot for this one.
Yeah.
It's a diverse position.
And you completely avoided blocking. You just don't care.
Yeah, that part, whatever. Whatever. You're not drafting a guy because he's...
You can teach him how to block.
Not drafting a guy early because of how he's blocking.
Right. You can teach him how to block, or you have Adrian Peterson.
Exactly.
You know? You don't care.
And you don't even care.
Yeah. Or you just don't put him on the field in important situations like Adrian Peterson. Okay, so NFL version. I think speed, Raheem Mostert.
That one's not very controversial, right?
Right.
He has the two fastest ball carrier speeds, I believe, ever by NGS.
Really?
So, well, now they've only been tracking for like 5 years, but still.
True, still.
He's fast.
Burst. I think Tony Pollard has one of the best bursts out there. I think there's a few guys that could fit in that category, but I think Pollard is right there.
Pollard, ETN.
Yeah.
ETN's burst is pretty nasty.
Right.
But, like, yeah, those are the guys who are Aaron Jones, high end, where it's just like stand still, whoosh, whoosh by you.
Agility, Saquon.
This one, I don't know. To me, agility, and now he is agile for his size. Mm-hmm. But like the undersized guys are usually the ones who trend agile at the NFL level.
Yeah, but who would you say is clearly more agile than Saquon? Because he's got some pretty ridiculous.
No, maybe like Austin Eckler.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see
that. Obviously, he's getting up there in age,
right.
Touches, but like he probably the last 3 years, you know, go back a couple years, probably the best in that mm-hmm. regard.
I could buy that. Strength, Derrick Henry. Just sheer brute force size, Derrick Henry.
No argument.
Contact balance, Nick Chubb.
Again, no argument. Good. Chubb is.
The last two, I've gone with the same guy, and I was torn on vision a little bit, but I think vision and route running, Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, hard to argue there. I will say his vision, like his ability to get in and out of like holes, is his biggest selling point as a runner. Like I don't think he's particularly the most, you know, the best tackle breaker. I don't think he's the fastest. I don't think like anything special in that regard. But his way, his feet, that he can get in and out of cuts is spectacular. And then the route running, obviously, is the receiver.
Yeah. I think it always has been. I mean, even dating back to Stanford, like that's been his biggest selling point. All right, Mike.
Collegiate version.
What does the draft version look like?
First off, hotly debated in this year's class. Nice. Loaded running back class. There's a lot of talent. But speed, there's two guys here that really came. But Devon Achane gets the Texas A&M running back. He's 5'9", 185. But he has confirmed track. He ran track at Texas A&M. 10 100-meter guy. They expect him to go 4.2s. Getting Chris Johnson comps.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far. But he is very fast. The other guy that I would say who I gave best agility to is Keaton Mitchell, because his actual GPS times, I don't know if he's going to run the same 40 and has the same track speed as Achane, but he was routinely over 22 miles per hour in the GPS. He flies. I was in person at the Cincinnati game, and he had a run down the sideline where like three guys took bad angles, and I was just like, whoa, where'd that come from? So both those guys, EC running back, Texas A&M running back, can fly. This class has some burners.
So the last sort of play you described is fascinating, because that to me is when you can see when a guy has ridiculous speed is when they completely break angles during games. And Chris Johnson did that maybe better than anybody I've ever seen, where he would go through a gap, a guy would have an angle on him, and he's just gone. Like the angle doesn't work.
Yeah.
And the problem is you can't retrain that in your brain during a game. Like you can't do it over the course of a single game. You're used to a certain angle of physics, and then all of a sudden physics doesn't work anymore because the guy you're going up against is just running at a different speed to any other human around, and it changes, and you can never rewire your brain fast enough to combat that.
And there's also, I think, Jonathan Taylor, Breece Hall, there's like a few guys who don't, like when they get up to top speed, they don't look like they're running any harder. And I think those guys also break angles even more than maybe guys who do have speed but look like they're like that, you know, are running fast. Whereas Jonathan Taylor will just like, he'll get up to speed and you don't even realize he's going that fast by you. I think Keaton Mitchell is definitely in that mold of like, oh wow, he just kind of is going.
Right. So those are your speed and agility guys.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Burst. I have Syracuse running back Sean Tucker. Now he's also up there for speed. He reportedly, as a high school recruit, ran the 4.2s. And I don't see that amount of speed, but he's probably a 4.3 guy. He's like 5'9", 205, rocked up dude. But when he gets there's a clip of him, I believe it was in the Louisville game, first week of the season, where he catches a screen. And the way he just cuts out of the catch of the screen to get upfield, it's pretty spectacular. So he has some elite caliber NFL burst. I'd put it in the realm of like a Tony Pollard, of the guys who are good at that in the NFL.
Now, nice.
Other aspects of his game leave a lot to be desired. But he's an explosive dude.
Okay. Strength and contact balance, since it's the same
guy. I have the same guy. Now, this class is bereft of the true power backs. You know, the Ramondre Stevensons of the world, the Najee Harrises of the world, the 230-plus dudes. There's not a lot in this class. You got, like, Chris Rodriguez from Kentucky. You got Tavian Thomas from Utah. There's not a lot. This class trends more towards, like, 205 pounds to about 220. There's a lot of dudes in that range. But I think the one guy who's got size and uses it really well, obviously, Bijan Robinson. Like, there's a reason he's talked about as this generational special, whatever you want to call him, prospect, running back. It's because he's 6 foot, 220 with elite athleticism and elite power behind him. So he is strong, not necessarily a power back, but his play strength is pretty damn good. And his contact balance, he broke the PFF record for broken tackles of the season this past year. He's the highest, I think, for a guy who's actually started throughout his entire career at the running back position. So I think it was like 500 carries. For anyone who had 500 carries in college, he's had the highest broken tackle rate of anyone. So
we're going to get to him later on in the show, but that's a good starting point for him. So vision and route running are two last ones.
Vision. I'm going to go UCLA's Zach Charbonnet. He was even called by his head coach, Chip Kelly, some of the best vision he's ever seen in running back. And Chip Kelly has a coach at the NFL level, has played with some good running backs, or not played with, coached some good running backs. Sean McCoy, notably, calls Zach Charbonnet one of the best visions that he's seen. So Zach Charbonnet, that's like one of his calling cards. UCLA running back, he'll get drafted highly because of it. And route running, the best pass catching running back in this class is Alabama's Jahmyr Gibbs. I don't think he's going to go in the first round. I've seen him first round mock, but I do think he probably comes off the board RB2. Probably just like a better version last year of James Cook coming out, like very similarly tooled, but I think Gibbs is just all around, has a more complete game.
Right, which makes him vaguely comparable to Dalvin Cook.
Yes,
James Cook to me was just like Dalvin Cook on 80% across the board. Like he just took down the notch everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's the same guy. It's amazing how alike they were. But you know, if he's comparable to James Cook, somewhere a little bit better, that's getting into some pretty useful territory.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Bijan Robinson, because he is being talked about as he's this year's, you know, generational running back. So first of all, how generational are we talking here? Because that, you know, that word has started to get pretty, you're pretty numb to that word these days, right? Every year, there's somebody that's generational.
Yes, yes, yes. No, and to me, a generation is like a football career. It's like 8 years.
Okay.
Every 8 years in the NFL, kind of, you have a completely new group of NFL players. Now you get some holdovers at quarterback, offensive line, but running back, if you have an eight-year career at running back,
you're doing well.
That's it. You know, so that's a generation in the NFL. So that's also the span of the PFF college era, basically. We've done 9 years of grading in college football. I would put Bijan Robinson personally as the best running back of that time span, just in terms of projection to the NFL. I thought Saquon's running style had a little too many worries, in my opinion. When projecting the league, obviously, fantastic athlete all around, no questions about that. But, like, he was a home run play merchant. Like, he was the guy bouncing outside. He'd stop his feet behind the line of scrimmage. He wasn't as decisive as I see Bijan Robinson on tape. And then Robinson's, like, there in that realm athletically. I'm not sure if he's going to test as off the charts as Saquon, but you don't need to be an elite running back at the NFL. He has very high-end tools. So
that would be my first question. If he's the best running back during the PFF era since we've been grading college football, who was that before this year? Who was the previous best running back you've seen come out?
That's tough. Now, I didn't love Leonard Fournette. Obviously, he was like the second highest drafted. So Saquon was the highest drafted, right, too. Leonard 4, Zeke 4. And Zeke was just very good, very sound. Zeke was like that guy who was maybe not the anti-Saquon Barkley, but like all the things that you kind of knock Saquon Barkley for, Zeke did already.
Yeah.
Zeke's like, this guy is NFL built all over him. Like, he gets upfield, he can pass protect, he can do all the little things. But I'll trend more towards the guy who's probably just a dynamic athlete. So love Saquon, love Dalvin Cook, obviously coming out, but he has other issues. But I'd probably have said Saquon was probably the best in the PFF era before.
Do you have a comp for Bijan?
Oh. Not a good one. Nothing I loved. I could look real quick who I put in the draft guide, but
so when I was watching his tape, he kind of struck me as a little bit of what you're saying before, that everything he does, he makes look really easy. Mm-hmm. Like, and it doesn't necessarily look like he's, you know, going 100%, but it just works. And that reminded me a lot of the kind of style is a lot of how Christian McCaffrey did really well. But yeah. Christian McCaffrey's a good athlete, with the exception of his three cone, which is like mind-blowingly insane. But everything else, he's like a good athlete. But what if you took that and made it, in, you know, had the same style from a great athlete? That kind of is where I'm feeling with Bijan Robinson at the moment.
All right. I put Edgerrin James.
Okay.
Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
So the kind of the do-it-all backs that were the rage in the 2000s.
Right.
There's Edge, LT. Like, that's the mold. That's the mold.
And LT isn't a bad comp either,
yeah,
actually.
I mean, that's like those similar guys were all very similar.
Yeah, and he had a similar style of, like, it didn't look difficult. Like, he just made those things look easy. I think my comp for McCaffrey when he was coming out was Priest Holmes which again, like when he was at his peak, was absurd.
Yeah.
Like they're all in that kind of similar mold of they just make this kind of thing look simple. And a lot of it is the vision and always being in the right place. And there are a lot of runs he makes where you can see the cut he's going to make, but he somehow makes it better and then gets through a gap better than other people making the same cut. It's just his ability to actually succeed doing those things is insane.
It's just smooth. Smooth.
Yeah. So, okay. So if he's the best running back we've come along, Saquon was probably the one before that. I think you've mentioned the guys that are in that conversation, right? Saquon, Leonard Fournette, depending on how you liked him, mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey, Zeke. Bijan is now number one in that category. The real question becomes, knowing what we know about team building, about running back data, PFF, how dependent running backs are and everything else, all those kind of things, right? Then all the way to the extreme of running backs don't matter, blah, blah, blah. How high do you take a guy like that? And this is not how high should the NFL take. How high, if you GM Michael, mm-hmm. how high does GM Michael draft Bijan?
So this will set the stage a little before I say where I draft. But like, there's like a few things at play here, right? One is the positional value, just like how much he's going to impact the field. We've seen, I think the Chiefs learned this, where it's like draft a running back. You think it's like, you know, this icing on the cake, the last piece of the puzzle, chair on top, whatever. But truth is, the best teams in the NFL don't want to take the ball out of the hands of their quarterback, right? They want to pass. You want to be able to run the ball, but truthfully, you don't want, you know, the offense to revolve around Derrick Henry. You don't, like, those guys get you only so far. You want to win through the air. That's how you do it. And as good as you can be as a receiver running back, you're probably still going to be like an average wide receiver. There's few guys who are actually running backs that could have been, you know, Christian McCaffrey's probably like one of the few, and that's why the 49ers right. paid the premium, where it's like, this guy can actually just split out wide and be a receiver and cool, and then make an impact there. So I wouldn't, you know, Bijan at 220, is he ever going to be that as a receiver? Probably not. So to join the elite, to be among the elite, you just want to pass, and that inherently devalues the running back position. And then the other point I said was, if you play 8 years at the running back position, that's a career. Like, that's a long career in the NFL. Whereas if you draft other, say, lower value positions, guard, tight end, those guys, 12 or 13 years is what you're expecting out of them. Like, that can be a cornerstone, especially offensive line, where if you get a Jason Kelsey, if you get a guy who's like a stalwart at guard, they're there for 15 years, and they're also relatively, like, they take pay cuts. Like, the hometown discount, a lot of guys taking those are the guys who aren't complaining about their contracts, tend to be along the offensive line for whatever reason it is. Like, you don't see a lot of O-line holdouts. That's just not a thing. So those two issues aside, I think Bijan Robinson is still good enough that I'd go as high in this draft, because it always, you know, depends right. on the other talent that you could get.
And that's an important point. Like, everyone always talks about, like, never take a running higher than whatever point. Yes. It always depends what else mm-hmm. is available. And actually, specifically with running backs in the first round, I think that may actually be the most important thing. It's the opportunity cost of what you could be yeah. potentially passing up the higher up the draft you go.
I would go as high as 18 to the Detroit Lions.
Okay. I think that's reasonable.
Because to me, to draft a running back that highly, I have to have a very good offensive line also. I don't care about the other aspect. Like, you know, the other things we said of like, oh, it has to be the last piece of a championship team. No, like, I have to have a top 10 at worst offensive line already for me to think it's going to pay off for me. Because that's when it really does, in my opinion, like having that elite level of running back is when it pays off, is when it takes you into that realm of unstoppable rushing game. So 18 Detroit, 23 Baltimore, and then that might be it of teams I'd actually be willing to pull the trigger on the first round.
Dallas?
And then 31 Philly. Dallas, no, because they're stuck with Zeke still, right? I mean, maybe they cut him, but they're stuck with that cap hit. And then that, I guess if you let Pollard walk too, maybe, but like, right. I don't know. I just think Dallas has other needs. And it's going to come to the offensive line too, where they did a good job of trying to rebuild it, but Tyron Smith, Jason Peters, obviously, they're old.
I think running back should be very clearly separated between the sort of what you would invest in free agency or second contracts and the draft. I think mm-hmm. they tend to get lumped into the same conversation as don't invest in running backs yeah. the end. But I actually think there's a much stronger argument for investing in running backs in the draft, even high, than there is investing a big money free agent contract and a running back. Yeah. And so where, but I do think you get to a point in the first round, like the higher up you go, where it no longer makes sense, right? So Saquon, for example, I don't want a running back at number two. Like, his contract is nuts for a running back. If he doesn't pan out, it's a problem. Plus, as you said, no offensive line. Like, it's just harder. And at number two, the opportunity cost of what you could have had, you know, behind door number two is probably a lot stronger.
Yes.
But let's say, let's Najee Harris, Jonathan Jake, or Josh Jacobs, like, I think they both went the same position, 24. 20s.
Yeah.
Those guys, contract-wise, are not on a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like, when you look where they stack up relative to other running backs in the NFL, that's a really reasonable deal.
Yeah.
And at the point where you're picking 24 or wherever in the 20s, you're probably not passing up on a blue-chip prospect to take that guy there. The contract isn't bad. And yet the talent at running back is arguably going to be the best guy in the draft, right? So I think that's the kind of sweet spot where it's actually, I don't have a problem with drafting a running back in the first round somewhere in, you know, the lower half of the middle of the round and below. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and last year, the first running back off the board was Breece Hall, right? And that was fine. Like, the Jets drafted Breece Hall with their fourth pick. They had three at that point?
Yeah, they had three in the first round.
Fourth pick. You're like, that's fine. His contract is a bargain. He might be the best running back available in this draft. That's a steal.
Yeah.
Embrace it.
No, I agree. And again, it's like, if the situation's in place. Like, if you are the Steelers, though, drafting Najee Harris, and you're like, he's going to change our running game, you're just going to be sorely mistaken. Right, you're just miscalculating how, or just misinterpreting how, or what leads to rushing success at the NFL level, putting the cart before the horse,
right?
Shall we say? So that's it's a twofold kind of problem in that, and I agree with you though that, like, at that range, I think people overestimate the hit rate of a lot of other positions, that you are really less than 50% of chance of getting a good NFL player there.
Yeah,
and that the safety and security are now, like, running back just somewhat of an easier position to scout in the traits that it takes to succeed at the NFL.
Right, so we can kind of broaden this from Bijan into this more general conversation about running backs being drafted. But that to me, the kind of mistake of putting the cart before the horse, that's just a process error rather than a fundamental, should you draft a running back at this position? The issue with Pittsburgh was exactly what everybody was saying at the time, which is, if you are drafting this running back in the first round believing it will fix your run game, you're out of your mind. Mm-hmm. That was the mistake, not drafting the running back in the first round at all. Like, I think that's entirely defensible. And, you know, if you look at Pittsburgh, they're sort of the proof either way. Like, it didn't fix their run game because they didn't fix the offensive line and the other parts of the offense that were causing the problems. But equally, if they ever do, A, Najee has already shown he's a good running back and can take advantage of that. And B, he's not on a lot of money. So if you ever actually get the rest of the stuff fixed, it's perfectly justifiable to take that guy in the first round. But I agree with you. Like, you should do it in the right order. Mm-hmm. There's no point bringing the running back in if the situation isn't there for him to actually have any success.
Yes. And it's not like quarterback where it's like, oh, he can develop. It's like, you're just putting needless miles on those tires. You know?
Running back is a weird position where their career is almost upside down. Like, it's the one position where a guy should be able to come in, hit the ground running immediately, and then arguably they're only going to get worse from that point on. The only counter to that is they're probably going to get more sophisticated in the pass game, and in particular from a blocking standpoint. The deeper into their career they get.
Yeah, I have no data to support this, but I think year two, year three is the prime of an NFL running back.
Yeah.
That's like, that is the peak. Like, I think you have, you know, year one of, like, learn the offense, everything's new, whatever, some hesitation, like, maybe you don't hit the ground and be elite, but year three, that's it. You're only getting worse from there, usually.
And that's another reason, I think, why it is kind of justifiable to take these guys reasonably high in the draft, because you are targeting the guys that are, you know, the superior prospects. You're only getting them probably for that first contract. If you have any sense, you're going to let them walk after that point, at which point there's value in that. There's value in getting that guy for the first contract, an elite talent, and hoping he doesn't get injured, and then letting the guy cook.
Dalvin Cook,
who's apparently having surgery on a shoulder that he broke in 2019, according to an Adam Schefter report today.
He's just like, you know what? I think it's time.
Yeah.
I've I've been in serious pain for 3-4 years. I think it's about.
I've been in daily agony for the last 3 or 4 years. And you know what? Now feels like the moment where that's become, the straw has broken the camel's back.
Exactly.
I'm finally going to get it fixed.
My insurance is good enough.
Right. In February, like February 14th. What has he been doing the last few weeks? Even if he was like, all right, finally, midway through the season, this is the year. It's too much. At the end of this season, I'm going to get it fixed. We're done.
Yeah.
What? He still waited like a month. Like, what are we doing? I don't understand that story at all. All right. So, in addition to all the running back stuff, Mike, you've been to the All-Star Games. You were at the Shrine Bowl, right? And you were also at the Senior Bowl. So, I want to hear some Mike Renner takeaways. Who stood out? Who stood out good and bad?
Good and bad. And so now, I don't think the bad, I'll just preface this by saying, I don't think the bad is as bad as the good is good.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't think the guys who go there and just, like, you know, have bad weeks, sometimes that can be, you know, you played at a small school, you just weren't ready.
Sure.
You know, this is so different. It's whatever. It's a whole new scenario. But the guys who really come there and look like, just look head and shoulders above everyone else, those are the guys, whether it's, you know, Terry McLaurin, Deebo Samuel, the guys we've seen there in years past, where it's like, okay, he's beating up guys who are going to be in the NFL.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's the thing to me that I'm looking for in senior, and particularly Senior Bowl week, but those all-star practice weeks. It's like, who are the guys that go there and just immediately look like they're at a different level to other people?
Because
that has to be a valuable data point.
So I think the guys who really did that at wide receiver, Tank Dell, Houston wide receiver, Michael Wilson, Stanford wide receiver. I also throw Jaden Reed, Michigan State wide receiver in there, but it's like maybe a little bit lesser degree. But those two guys, they didn't lose. And two different types of wide receivers. Dell, Houston wideout. He led the FBS in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, but he's 5'9", 165. He's about as small as it gets. But, man, his game is eerily. And now I don't love all draft comps, but the DeSean Jackson, Tank Dell draft comp is like, they move the same. They have the same level of speed. Now DeSean Jackson was like a punt returner coming out. But like when they are in the open field, no one catches them. And somehow they just like that caliber of athleticism is different. And it's easy to look different on Houston tape, but then when he's different against other, again, NFL corners, you're like, oh, okay. So I think Tank Dell could go in a very similar range to where DeSean Jackson went. I think he could have a very similar career. So he really stood out. Wilson, though, a guy who he just got hurt a bunch. I think he had multiple collarbone injuries at Stanford. Back in like 2019, he was, I think, their second leading receiver and just has not had a full season since. He hasn't had close to a full season since. So, but he's a bigger dude, 6'2", almost 220, but he just got route running chops. You know, he knows how to get off the line, knows how to get clean out of his breaks. Very impressed with him. So those two guys, I think, made themselves a lot of money.
The Tank Dell, DeSean Watson comp, or just not DeSean Watson, DeSean Jackson comp, is fascinating because DeSean Jackson is probably like the archetype success story for that undersized speedster receiver that even if he's a one-trick pony, the one trick is so good that he's going to hang around for a decade or more and make every single team that he's on immediately better. Mm-hmm. And we've struggled a little bit. I think the league has struggled a little bit. How do you identify that guy versus the guy that appears to have all of that and it just doesn't work?
No. The league's been trying to find that. You know, Dwayne Eskridge, Rondale Moore, Tutu Atwell.
Tutu's a good example.
Last year, Wandale Robinson. Everyone wants that next DeSean Jackson. But I've not thought of any of those guys as the next DeSean Jackson.
So, like, what separates, you know, Tutu Atwell from DeSean Jackson, from to the extent where one works and one doesn't? And look, Tutu made some plays at the end of last season. Maybe he's going to come on. But like so far, we're not looking at this guy saying he's the next DeSean Jackson.
I think there's two big things. One's foot speed. And so like foot speed gets you off the line of scrimmage clean when you're undersized. You need straight line speed, but then you also need agility. And a lot of guys who have straight line speed, a lot of guys don't have both, right? So I do think a Dwayne Eskridge was not, his foot speed was very average. A Tutu Atwell was not the same level of just like whatever that is, you know, foot speed. Again, and then it's being able to stop. To be effective in that route tree of just like getting vertical, you have to be able to sell verticals and then stop on a dime to make any of that work, or else everyone's just going to run with you vertical. And then, because cornerbacks, NFL cornerbacks are very agile, you know, that's like a prerequisite for the position. So those guys can stop on a dime and come back downhill very quickly. Whereas I didn't see that from Dwayne Eskridge. I did not see that to the degree from Wandale Robinson, that it's just like they're go from full speed to a full stop without you having any time to react, and then can get back downhill for a comeback. So I do think that's one of the biggest things that gets not off talked about with these speed wide receivers is, can they actually throttle that speed and, you know, create that separation that it takes. So I do think I see that from takedown.
I think a huge part of it is also how your hands work during the route. Like, you need to be able to get off contact.
Yeah,
you have to be able to get away from the corner and separate, because A, NFL cornerbacks are too fast. Like, the difference between even a speed wide receiver and a cornerback is not a lot. Mm-hmm. And if there is any difference, the corner can immediately negate that if he gets any kind of contact on you. Like, if you get stopped for a split second, whatever speed differential you have over him is dead. And that's why, like, Richard Sherman with his 4.5 or whatever was almost never beaten deep, because it was so hard to get off him. Like,
yes,
to get,
he can touch you.
You're right,
from wherever.
Rid
so
of the contact.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, so Rashee Rice is really interesting to me, because it feels like he wants the contact. He seems terrible at getting off that contact. Like, he blows by dudes, but then almost seems to, like, reinitiate the contact and get stuck on a corner that he should be separating, like, 2, 3, 4 yards down the field based off, like, how his physical advantage is over that guy.
And he did not have a great Senior Bowl. He was up and down because of that. Like, he'd get stuck on DBs.
And yeah.
That's just the way of the world when you have that play style.
And that feels like a thing that I there's not too many guys you can think of that, like, struggled with that as a concept and then fixed it. Like, immediately figured out how to avoid contact and get clean off those physical encounters with DBs deep down the field. All right, other positions.
Defensive line, I thought a number of guys stood out. Will McDonald from Iowa State, probably going to be highest drafted guy that was there. Well, on defensive line, I thought he had a good week. But the guy who, like, really, now I was high on him going in, but, like, came there and answered a lot of questions to me was Carl Brooks from Bowling Green. At Bowling Green, he was an edge rusher, which is why I was like, I wanted to see him, because he's 6'4", 300, and he's not going to be an edge rusher in the NFL. You know, no one at that size is playing edge in the NFL. So he's an interior guy, but had never played there at Bowling Green. So he goes there and just looked like he belonged. You know, had a lot of good reps in the team period, a lot of good reps in the one-on-ones. And, you know, against the run, double teams, we worry about with those guys, it didn't look like a liability. It wasn't elite or anything by any means, but, like, I think he can play in the NFL at that size on the interior. So I think he made himself a lot of money. And then another off-ball linebacker with kind of, like, tweener size concerns, Ivan Pace Jr., the Cincinnati linebacker. He's like a poor man's Micah Parsons. He's an unbelievable blitzer, unbelievable at defeating blocks, but he is 5'11", 230. You know, so he's like Micah Parsons minus 3 inches,
right?
Minus 20 pounds. But, man, he gets after it. He had a rep in the actual game where Osiris Torrance is climbing to the second level. Osiris Torrance is 6'4", 345, and he put him flat on his back. Like, he pancaked a guard that size. I'm in awe of what he could do. He ran the fastest of any linebacker on the GPS. So no one's going to want to draft a linebacker who's 5'11", just because of the coverage aspect in today's NFL. Can't shut down windows. One-on-one with tight ends is, like, it's just tough. But everything else besides that size is pretty sweet. So
that's sort of sounding, other than the size part, a little bit more like a Dante Hightower than it is a Micah Parsons, in terms of a guy who can rush the passer really well, not necessarily as an edge rusher, but if you get him matched up one-on-one versus running backs, tight ends, he just destroys those guys.
Yeah. Well, he beat offensive linemen at Cincy, too. It was the weird, like, there's no proof of concept for a guy that size ever rushing the passer at the NFL level.
Right.
You know, so that's the problem. Like, even Elvis Dumervil was sub-6 foot, right? He was about the small,
like, five,
shortest,
10, 11,
tightest built. But Elvis Dumervil was, what, like 5'11", 265 or something? Like, he was load. So if Pace wants to gain 20 pounds, hey, I'd think about it. But just a unique skill set, so we'll see.
I mean, that's how big. Robert Mathis was pretty tall, right? Like, he was 240 something.
Mathis wasn't that tall. I think Mathis might have been,
I think he was tall. Maybe I'm making
six
that up.
Foot 235?
6'2".
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah. I always...
But he wasn't like a long rangey guy, but he was under 240. He's one of the few to do it under 240. And now in that scheme, they kind of just let him not play the run, which helped. But yeah, Mathis, that's interesting.
They had a strange combination of Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, mm-hmm. both of whom were undersized, both of whom were reasonably short.
But those guys were shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, Dwight Freeney, just that coil and the inside spin move, obviously, that was unstoppable for a decade. And then Robert Mathis with just absurd speed around the edge. Yeah. But yeah, like Mathis is the sort of guy that you think prototypical, tiny, you know, small, undersized edge rusher. But it always did stick in my brain that he's always taller than you think he was. Yeah.
James Harrison might be like the closest size comp, right? James Harrison was like 6 foot 240.
Yeah.
But James Harrison was 6 foot 240 without an ounce of fat. He was muscle, 6 foot 240.
He was a brick.
Which,
this was a guy that went undrafted and had to basically prove that he could function at that level.
So we'll see. We'll see what Pace can do.
Okay. Anybody else?
Last big winner, I'll say. I think DeJuan Jones, the Ohio State offensive tackle. He's massive.
I was gonna say we have to start with the wingspan, right?
He's the biggest offensive tackle that I've ever seen, just like from a frame. He's 6'9", wingspan is 7'5". hands are 11 3/8 inch or 11.5 inches. So he's gonna have like the biggest hand size ever at the combine, biggest wingspan ever at the combine,
which makes him only half an inch smaller than Steve's hands.
Yeah, he's good. Steve's got mitts, but he's huge, right? He's like if Steve played offensive tackle. And lost some weight. Just kidding, Steve. You worry about those guys. You know, Daniel Falele last year, kind of similar dude, right? You worry about foot speed. What are you going to do against Robert Mathis? What are you going to do against Savon Miller? What are you going to do against Willie Anderson when you're that size? I think he gets around it with his play style. You know, he's quick setting guys, he's getting his hands on them, he knows how to use his hands really well, and he's kind of avoiding situations where he has to react and really utilize that foot speed because he's so just adept. And I think he's, you know, I saw him as right there and while he's so he played the first day, actually only one day of practice, and it's utterly dominant, and that's like, I was like, whoa, really eye-opening. And then what then also opened my eyes is he's there the rest of the week with the offensive line group, and he's like calling out the moves that the defensive linemen are going to do. He's like, he'll watch the inside move, do this. Like, he's locked in still. Like, a student of the game, actually, you know, is preparing still,
right,
kind of,
he
as
sat
he's
out,
in it.
Right, because he had a headache or something, so they held him out for a couple of days.
He just dominated enough that his agent told him to stop, probably. But it's just that guy who's still locked in, like that competitive nature that I'll go to bat for. If a guy like is wired that way, you can see the tape that he had at Ohio State, which is very good, rarely lost in pass pro, translating to the NFL. So I think he made himself a lot of money.
He looks visibly a lot more agile and better movement skills than a guy like Falele.
Yes, it's night and day. Falele was like below the threshold, in my opinion, of
now,
playable.
You, in the past, I believe, have, suggested the opinion that you can be too long as an offensive tackle.
Yes.
The LaRaven Clark problem.
So few know how to use their hands at that length. But he has 36 and like a half inch arms. And he knows how to use them really well. It's a rarity. So, again, not the type of tackle I usually go for. I worry about, you know, the foot speed there. And I also worry about injuries. It just, whether it's Mekhi Becton, whether it's Trent Brown, those guys don't stay on the football field. They just haven't. When you're that size, your knees, your ankles, your back are under a lot of stress. So I still don't like, you know, not top 15, not top 20. But, you know, back into the first, if you're a team that really, you know, maybe you're a run-heavy team, maybe you got a mobile quarterback, I'd look long and hard about DeJuan Jones because no one's bull rushing that dude. You know, if you're going to face contain rushes because your quarterback's so athletic, if you're like the Ravens, if you're the Bears, that you want to tackle like that.
Okay, so that was winners from the Senior Bowl. Were there any guys that definitely let themselves down?
Yes, the one guy, a couple guys I'd call losers from the Senior Bowl. Jalen Duncan, the Maryland offensive tackle. I mean, he looks the part in kind of everything he does. He's very smooth, very just a natural athlete, very well put together. And just like the pass reps come, and he just kind of like is lackadaisical. Didn't look locked in. Had one of the lowest pass blocking win rates of anyone in the one-on-ones throughout the week. Just kind of like, He just leaves you wanting more on tape. A heck of an athlete. Like I said, like put together like guys like Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones that people are talking about as top 10 picks. Duncan's in that similar mold, but just leaves his tape is just nowhere near those guys. So thought he didn't had a chance to make himself some money. Did not. And then J.L. Skinner, the Boise State safety, who listed at 6'4", 220. You're thinking he can be this, you know, either Kyle Hamilton slot or even maybe just like transition to off-ball linebacker entirely if he puts on some weight. He comes there 6'4", 211. And that's just like not – that's just not as skinny. He looks like he belongs on a basketball court.
Right.
That's just not a build that I really want playing defensive back in the NFL because you're too high cut to really be like a corner on the outside or a safety that can like – you know, flip his hips and run from like an off alignment because you're that tall. It's just like difficult at that size to do. And then you're not big enough to play in the box. You're not strong enough to play in the box whatsoever. So J.L. Skinner, very much a tweener. He looked at Senior Bowl.
This was a case of the list weight just being 20 pounds off, or he'd actually changed composition specifically.
He looked skinnier. Like right. He looked like he had came there to be svelter, which I don't know. Not ideal.
Okay. What about the same winners and losers from the Shrine Week? Was there anybody that stood out?
Shrine Bowl. There was a corner by the name of Kytrell. I think that's his name. I think it's Clark. Louisville corner. Got after it. Undersized dude. I think like 5'9", 5'10", 180, something in that range. But man, feisty, great route breaks. I thought he made himself some money there. On the flip side of things, the bad side of things, there are actually like a number of guys who I was looking forward to seeing there that were like top 100 on the PFF board that none of them really stood out. Now, Zay Flowers barely even practiced, went there and kind of just went through the motions. Whatever for him, the Boston College wide receiver. But the Texas duo of defensive tackles, Keandre Coburn and Moro Ojomo, both were top 100 players heading into the Shrine Bowl. Neither went there, and obviously the competition level, Shrine Bowl versus Senior Bowl, a lot more at Senior Bowl, a lot more NFL talent Senior Bowl than there was at the Shrine Bowl. Offensive line talent that they were going up against, nothing special, and just kind of didn't dominate. You know, you're expecting to dominate. They just kind of looked solid. Just nothing special. So probably still in that late day two range for both of them to early day three.
It feels like we are starting to get a ton of buzz about Zay Flowers at the moment.
Yeah,
like
Zay.
A lot of people seem to love that guy. Steve Smith, I saw, was absolutely going to bat for him, saying he's incredible. His tape is phenomenal. This dude is amazing.
Yeah, I think he's a senior, and usually, you know, any top wide receiver prospect, usually they're coming out early. You know, Devontae Smith, probably one of the few outliers of guys drafted highly that spent 4 years in college. It's kind of a position you know and you see and identify early. But I do think he was a lot – so he put on a good deal of weight from last offseason or last season to this season, and he added like a little more juice to his game because I think he was listed at 170. He comes to the Shrine Bowl at 180. And I just think that's because he put in a lot of effort in the weight room from last year to this year and just looked different athletically, and that's why you're seeing a guy rise up boards so late in his career.
Yeah, and like when you're that size – it doesn't sound like anything, but the difference between 170 and 180 is not insignificant. When you're talking about a guy that starts off at that size, like that's a pretty significant body composition change if you're piling on muscle.
It's a lot of muscle for a 5'9", dude. You know, like that on a 5'9" frame, that's a lot.
All right, Michael, a little bit of a short show today, but we're good.
Can't talk about running backs too long.
No, it's contractually. We're not allowed. Yeah. I mean, it's BFF.
We get
turfed out of the Western and Southern studio if we were trying that. So, conclusions, Bijan Robinson, generational, legitimately good. Generational.
Good player.
Absolutely. Good player. We would draft him in the first round. Now, not crazy high, but you can absolutely draft this guy in the first round. And generally, we would draft running backs in the first round if they're that good. We have no problem with that, unlike others. You know?
We're woke. We're second woke. We're the pushback woke.
We are the backlash to the running backs don't matter. And then, obviously, Mike gave us his breakdown of the All-Star game winners and losers over the course of those weeks. So I think those are fascinating weeks of practice. I've always been big proponent on the guys that stand out actually being guys to watch going yes. forward. I think showing up and showing that you are at a level different to the all-star group of college yeah. athletes and therefore guys that are going to be in the NFL can only stand in your favor.
Yeah. Now. And I think, and there's truly, I mean, I highlighted five guys that I, like even of those five, it, like that's like it though. Like that's what I'm trying to say is like, there's not that many more that it actually was impactful for. Like that I was like, oh, you know, looking like a little good there, I don't think is any indicator of success. You better go there and dominate to get that level of where it's like, okay, then to change your opinion on a guy, he has to show out something different.
Yeah, and it's obviously not, you know, one-to-one. Like Denzel Mims absolutely wrecked the Senior yeah. Bowl, and the guy has struggled to do anything at the NFL level mm-hmm. so far. So it's not like it's a guarantee, but I still think it's a pretty important data point, and I'm definitely willing to go to bat for guys that show that kind of performance.
Mims also probably committed about 6 OPIs in the one-on-ones that year.
Yeah, that'll help. All right, Michael, thank you very much for the draft insight.
For sure.
We will be back tomorrow, myself and Steve. No earthly idea what we'll be talking about yet since all the games have now finished. But the mailbag is always open, so send us an email at nflpodcast@pff.com. We are almost there to our fundraising goal to see Steve try and play rugby. We need another, $145 to hit that goal. So go to the charity drive. It's my pinned tweet @PFF_Sam. That's it for us. Thanks for watching. We will see you tomorrow.